listening to Truth to You with Jono, and it's time for the Torah Restorer, the Levite in the land, Yoel Ben Shlomo. G'day, mate.
Oh, for me, it's day. For you, it's night.
It is night now.
Being on the wrong hemisphere of Earth, so for you, it's nighttime already.
And it's summer here, and it's winter there. Figure it out.
Exactly. actually, it's raining. It's very dark here at the moment in Israel. It's clouds. You can't even see the sky.
So it's raining. It's good, right? You need the rain.
We've had over 2 weeks of just winter, pure winter. Mm-hmm. And I don't remember when was the last time we actually had weather like this. So I am very, 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 very pleased.
Oh, I'm glad.
Weather is beautiful.
I know you need the rain, and that's at least something we have in common. It's raining here as well. But the last time you and I spoke, it was part three, wasn't it, of Shabbat?
It was part three of Shabbat, and we spoke about a couple of things.
You gave a really nice overview of what a Shabbat looks like, just a traditional Shabbat. Looks like for you in Jerusalem, what happens? What is the rundown of the day, traditionally speaking? And you gave a very nice, quick overview. But we ended with the question: next time we get together, can you tell us? You know, let's just take some of the prayers that you say in the synagogue, or you know, some of the things that traditionally happen on Shabbat. Can we just sort of focus in on some of your favorite things and just take a closer look at them? And that's what we're hoping to do today.
Okay, so we'll do that. So first of all, we have to start off with what exactly is a siddur. So the prayer book we use today, you know, you have in classic churches, you have hymn books.
Mm-hmm.
The Jewish prayers are not really built necessarily just as hymns. There's a massive usage of psalms from the book of Psalms. There's also prayers which were written throughout the centuries inside the Jewish world. Some of them theoretically date back to very, very early stage, maybe even from the time of the Second Temple. We're not too sure about that. A lot of the practices done in prayer today might resemble things that have to do with the temple service. There was a book written by a man called Heyman, I think his name was. Mm-hmm. No, Heinemann. His name was Heinemann. He wrote a book about the prayer in Judaism. And there's entire chapters that focus also about Second Temple period.
Mm-hmm.
And he also says there might have been some kind of resemblance to, it might have resembled the prayers in the temple. We're not too sure.
Okay.
It might have not, but it did not spread out of nowhere. So a few basics about prayer itself. So first of all, prayer in Judaism, we face Jerusalem when we pray. This is why most synagogues, except for ones that, you know, just take the turn to the east thing. So there was a joke in Poland. There were jokes in Poland where there were synagogues that is faced east. So rabbis would make jokes of like, so you're praying toward Moscow. So in general, the idea is that if you don't know where to turn to, you don't know where Jerusalem is, mm-hmm. then you turn to whatever direction you want, or at least more or less a direction. But when you build a synagogue, you have to kind of know where Jerusalem is.
Yeah, well, that's fair enough. But I mean, being on the other side of the earth, to be honest, I think off the top of my head, I think I would be turning towards the northwest.
West. Yeah, that's more or less the direction. That's part one. That's one of them. Now, prayer itself is done either sitting, standing. In older times, people also used to go down on their knees, bow on the floor. That was stopped at one point because of the Muslims, and there was actually a dispute about this. So first of all, Karaites until this very day still go down on their knees and bow and everything.
Mm-hmm.
And I used to do that as well because I used to follow everything the Rambam writes. And that's one of the things that he points out, that when you bow, you go down your knees and literally bow.
Mm-hmm.
That's a regular form of bowing used in the biblical times. There's nothing, the Muslims did not invent this. One of the arguments when Maimonides wrote this and his son defended it, and people were attacking his father, mm-hmm. because his father describes something very similar to the Muslims do. So his son wrote, "What do we care what the Muslims do? This is just a form of worship. You go down your knees and you bow. There's sure. nothing special here. They did not invent this. This was mm-hmm. a worldwide known way of bowing. So what Jews do today, besides that thing where we kind of like go backwards and forwards, which by the way, the Talmud actually says not to do, but there's a whole thing where you can see people like waving very quickly or slowly waving. Yeah. the Talmud actually says not to do. The Talmud says you should be standing as if you're standing in front of a king.
Okay, so this is something this is something I've never really understood. I know there are references in the Tanakh in regards to bowing or even prostrating oneself on the ground as a form of worship. I have no problem with that, but I've never understood the back and forth movement that we often see traditional Jews, particularly at the Wailing Wall, if you like, and we often see footage of that. I mean, can you give us a little bit of background? How did that start? Do you know?
When you're standing your feet a very long time and you're trying to concentrate, it just naturally happens.
Oh, fair enough.
But there are people who do it so intensely that it looks as if they're waving really powerfully. It's just an issue that's a way of concentrating.
Okay.
So, you know, if you ever watch someone doing meditation, some people don't sit still. They just start moving mm-hmm. with the regular vibration of their body. By the way, real meditation, you're supposed to be sitting there completely still. But I don't know what's the point of doing that.
Sure.
I don't really practice meditation on that way, you know.
So what does the Talmud say to that prevents that says not to do this?
So Talmud says one has to stand as if they're standing in front of a king, as a servant in front of a king. Uh-huh. Now, if you've ever seen a servant standing in front of the king, they don't wave, they don't move. You stand still. So what Talmud says is you stand and you have your hands near your chest.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know why that. Every time I see servants, they either have their hands on the sides or in front of them. So my money is the one that says put it on your chest. I just put my hands down, mm-hmm. kind of low, like a servant that's ready for a command.
Sure.
And you have to say the words are done said slowly, supposed to be said slowly, clearly. If there's any songs, you sing them. Those songs we don't know of songs being sung in synagogues in ancient times, but in time, we know of the fact that, first of all, songs in general, music in general, mm-hmm. thousands of years ago was not singing the way we sing today. It was more chanting.
Mm-hmm.
And one of the theories is that the songs of the Levites in the temple was more chanting. It wasn't like melodies like we have today. It was very, very different. Mm-hmm. In the Eastern world, by the way, they still preserve that. Their music is more like chanting. It's not really singing the way we sing. And there's a beat, there's a melody, but the song itself is done in a certain tempo. But songs today, yes, you find songs in synagogues, and we're going to talk about Shabbat. So there's a lot of songs sung in the synagogue during Shabbat. We're going to look at some of them. And what we also know about prayer, and this is the understood way how it was done, is prayer was spontaneous. But at one point around the time of the Second Temple, people had difficulty doing spontaneous prayer. The knowledge of Hebrew wasn't as high as it was earlier. At least that's mm-hmm. what's described. Specifically, I'm going to focus a bit on Maimonides because he has like a whole in his book. There's like a whole thing just about the issue of prayer, and he goes into all these little details and everything. Basically, they say that around the time of the Second Temple, they already had a lot of what's called the Amidah, the 18 blessings, the 18 blessings said every day.
Yes.
I won't be surprised. A lot of the people probably here listening to the show probably know of this. This is one of the earlier formats of prayer that we have as a system of prayer.
Mm-hmm.
Unlike, for example, the Book of Psalms, which are basically psalms that people wrote either in a spontaneous way or someone composed them and became a song that was sung.
Mm-hmm.
But prayer was really individual. Each person had his own individual prayer.
Can I just ask you? Can I just ask you something? Because we're focusing a little bit on prayer here, and out of my ignorance, let me just ask a question. In temple times, there was the evening and the morning prayers, right? And
there was. It's actually based on the issue of the morning and evening sacrifice.
Okay.
The issue of morning and evening prayers, I'm going to say, as I usually do, I'm going to blame Zoroastrianism for this. The issue of organized prayer
mm-hmm.
actually came from Zoroastrianism.
Really?
We find in the book of Daniel prays three times a day.
Mm-hmm.
You open up the Zoroastrian books, and it says that originally, and that would be more or less the time of Daniel, they prayed three times a day. It's very interesting. There's a link here which has driven me mad. Because you look at the book of Daniel,
mm-hmm.
and he has these three prayers a day, and that's actually what we base the whole thing, the whole principle of three prayers a day in Judaism on one hand. On the other hand, you open up the Zoroastrians, and that's exactly what they did.
Isn't that interesting?
Morning, afternoon, and evening at a very specific appointed times.
Uh-huh. But he opens his window.
Looking links like that.
Yeah, so he opens his window.
So he opens his window towards Jerusalem, he goes down on his knees, and he prays three times a day.
Interesting.
So I don't think that you have to pray three times a day. Mm-hmm. If it was up to me, I would have, you know, just said, you know, each person has to pray for himself. But that would completely destroy the whole concept of a synagogue. You know, because when people commune to pray, they really did it when there was a need for it. But a person used to do his own individual prayers. And one of my neighbors once asked me, why do you barely go to synagogue? And I say, because I don't see a need to necessarily go and pray inside a specific structure and have to be led by the congregation to pray. Mm. And anyhow, most of prayer that's done in the synagogue is individual. So what's the point?
Mm.
So I don't make a fuss out of it. I go to synagogue, but I don't make a fuss out of it. You know, if I wake up one morning and I don't have the energy to go to the synagogue, I just, you know, put on my tefillin, put on my talit, and pray. And that's it. And I don't have to think about it too much. But it's there's a fixation now. We've become a religion of prayer. And it's kind of annoying because it's Torah has a lot more other things than prayer. But everything's pray, pray, pray. And it's kind of going to
– Are you kind of saying that there's a lot of – I mean, you're – I mean, in that sense, I guess you would feel obligated to pray as opposed to having a conversation with God about things that are actually going on in your life, things that you want to just talk out with Him, things that you want to ask Him or put to Him, and things that you just want to thank Him for in your own personal existence. If it's formatted, then it becomes sort of an obligation, and that's, I guess, it's less mechanical. Inviting. It's mechanical, yeah.
It's mechanical, and that's one of the arguments I've always had. I when I was 19, 20, I could go through days without praying because it was just so mechanical. Mm-hmm. It's just so mechanical. You go and you have this text, you pick up a siddur, la 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 la, and you're done. That's it.
Mm.
And I don't think that's the meaning of prayer. Prayer has to come from the heart. It's the work. It's the worship of the heart. It's what comes out of from inside of you.
I would agree.
But they were so concerned that you might say the wrong words or ask for the wrong things. We're going to tell you what to think. We're going to tell you what to ask for.
Well,
Obviously, my least favorite prayers are the ones where I'm told what to say.
Right. Well, that's what I was going to ask you because,
what to ask for.
It reminds me again of Rev Thévière in Fiddler on the Roof, and he's always wandering along with his horse and he's having conversations with God. He's just got all this time on his hands from going from the town to his house with the milk and his horse, and he's always having these conversations with God. This is what he does. And is there anything wrong with that? Is that the mindset of many Jews or not so? I mean,
it was understood at one point that the ignorant don't have the ability to tell us to say how to pray. We're going to tell them how to do so. And in the Talmud itself, in the Tractate of Brachot, it speaks about things you're not supposed to say to God. What do you mean things you're supposed to say to God? If you're wrong, so God will forgive you. But, you know, standing there and praising God, you know, and saying God is a great almighty, and I give a whole list of titles. So this rabbi sat there and said, are you done? And he says, what do you mean? Well, he can't really finish the titles of God, so let's stick to these three. And I kind of disagree with that opinion. It says, no, a person praises as much as he can. If he wants to praise, then let him go.
Yeah.
But it was a mindset of like, no, you have to be very careful what you're going to say, and you have to be very quick with that, and the practices have to be very, very specific. And I don't see that. You know, the Torah says, you know, temple service, for example. Temple service is kind of specific in the Bible.
Mm-hmm.
But this understanding that a Kohen, you know, they describe it as that Kohen has to walk where he places his feet in a certain way when he walks towards the altar. And he has to walk that specific way. Where does it say that in the Bible? Where? Show me. I beg of you. Show me.
Okay. So there's obviously some really pedantic stuff going on in regards to this, and particularly in regards to prayer. But obviously, in regards to Shabbat and the prayers that are said at Shabbat, there are specific prayers that really shine for you that you really like. We're going to focus on some of those ones.
Yeah. So first of all, just the history of the siddur. So first of all, today when you walk into a Jewish bookstore and you look for a siddur, if it's a bookstore here in Israel, you're going to be seeing about 9 bazillion different siddurim. But essentially, they're all more or less the same. During the times of the Geonites, we're talking about early medieval times. They already had fixed prayers in the second and even first temple as first century Judaism, either in Israel or in Babylon.
Mm-hmm.
But what's very, very interesting is that the protocol of the 18 benedictions written as the Shmona Esrei or the Amidah, which my very good friend Rico has been teaching about lately, they were always 18, and then they developed a blessing, which is kind of a curse for the early Christians, the ones who specifically fulfilled Torah, the followers of Marcion who wanted to completely get rid of the Torah, or people who just started believing in Yeshua as being God, so they were kicked out of the synagogues. And one of the ways of doing it was by producing this prayer where it actually curses the Christians and actually mentions the word Nutzrim. There's actually a version of it from from the Cairo Gniza. It's actually in the Cairo Gniza, which was discovered by Solomon Schechtel in the 1800s. It was known, it was blocked up, but it was reopened. Solomon Schechtel was one of the people who worked on it, and he pulled out manuscripts of Sidurim. And some of the earliest Sidurim that we know, first the word Sidur is from the word Seder. Seder means an order. So if everyone has ever heard of a Seder night, the whole idea of a Seder night is an order of how you do things. Yes. You eat this, you do that, you say this, you do that. That's a Seder night. That's the whole idea of it. Mm-hmm. And the Sidur is basically another form of saying the word Seder. Mm-hmm. And it has an order. So how does it work? You start off with certain things you say in the morning, and then things you say in the evening, things you say in between. And what happened was that there were two prominent Sidurim at the time that became the base Sidurim for either the European Jews or North African, Babylonian, Yemenite Jews. Mm-hmm. So there was the Rav Saadia Gaon Sidur, which is the shortest type of Sidur we have, which became very common. Mm-hmm. It's a fascinating Sidur. There's interesting introductions there. By the way, Sidurim were not only just books of prayer, they were also books of law. There's stuff in these Sidurim which have to do with how to practice things, how to do things. Okay. There was one Sidur which actually was basically literally a book of law. Besides the prayers, it was literally a book of law as well. Mm-hmm. And then there's the Sidur of Rav Amram Gaon. Rav Amram Gaon actually lived before Rav Saadia, and he wrote a Sidur which was sent to, I think it was Italy, and that became the base of the Sidur of Ashkenaz, of Europe. Mm-hmm. The earliest Jews in Europe actually came from Italy, and those from Italy actually came from Israel. Mm-hmm. And the Jews of Germany used to have a joke that Germany belonged to the Jews because Jews were there in certain areas in Germany way before the Germans. Mm-hmm. And this is actually historically accurate. It was kind of funny. Used to say Germany's ours because they were there first.
Yeah, right.
But Jews were in France in the Second Temple period, Rome, Greece, North Africa. The Egyptian Jews were there from the time of the First Temple. I would say that some of the Egyptian Karaites were probably descendants of those people. Mm-hmm. And there were Jews in Babylon from the destruction of the Second Temple. So the European Jews are the later congregations, but many of them originated from the land of Israel. So there were also practices inside the Ashkenaz synagogues, which belonged to the European culture, the land of Israel culture, Jerusalem culture. Very interesting. It's an entire subject. We can't talk about it now. But so these became two prominent ones, but they were more or less very similar. Just the text itself was a bit shorter here, a different word. The Sidurim were more or less the same. So prayers on Shabbat used to take a bit longer. Now, why is it so? First of all, there are more psalms. So if you open up, if anyone has a Sidur in front of them, if you open up a Sidur on the Shabbat prayers, it begins off with first of all, there's a thing called the Kabbalat Shabbat. We spoke about Kabbalat Shabbat a couple of times. I just want to be very, very specific about it. So we have six psalms. Mm-hmm. First of all, many synagogues start off with the Song of Songs, which is basically a love song. Mm-hmm. Again, why was it written? How was it written? I'm not going to go there, but it's basically a love song. We read it in the synagogue as if we're reading a love song to God and the Shabbat. That's the basic idea of that. So it starts off with the Psalms from the Book of Psalms. Then we have the thing called the Lecha Dodi. So Lecha Dodi was a song written about 300 years ago by a Kabbalist, Rabbi Shlomo Alkabetz. He was a Kabbalist. He wrote this song. I actually spoke with Kabbalists about it. They actually said that the Ari, who was the founder of what we know as Kabbalah today, actually was against this song. He said there were different mistakes in it, which I don't even know what he means. But it's a song that kind of goes over the issue. First two talk about Shabbat. Keep and remember the Shabbat we're said in one saying, which the one special God has sounded to us. God is one. His name is one for glory and praising. Mm-hmm. And you know, it goes on and on. It's a beautiful song. And then it talks about the redemption of Israel. arise from the dirt, arise, put on your garments of glory by the son of Yishai from the house of Bethlehem. Salvation has come near me. You know, it's a very, very, it's beautiful. It's, and there's many, many different tunes for this song. Some congregations sing this with like, you can hear it from a distance. They're singing it with full voices. It's just a very, very beautiful song.
Yeah.
And the end of it, it says, "Come in peace, the glory of her husband, with with happiness and joyfulness,
mm-hmm.
into the people, into a chosen special people. Come bride, come bride." Now the whole thing of boy kala, come the bride. So the Talmud actually says that there was a rabbi, and this is the origins for this, but it was a rabbi around probably the 3rd or 4th century who would go out to a field. It's a beautiful idea, and I've done this before. We actually would go out to a field where we can see the sun set, then turn to the east where darkness is coming to,
mm-hmm.
and say boy kala, we're basically welcoming the Shabbat into the world, Shabbat into our lives. So it's okay. The Kabbalat Shabbat is way beyond what some of the people do in the Hebrew roots. It's a very joyful. We sing. The acceptance of Shabbat. If people come down, you know, if people come to the Western Wall during Friday evening before mm-hmm. sunset, they'll see a place crowded and people singing. At least the ones that do sing,
mm-hmm.
and it's very joyful. This is one of the.
I was just going to say, yeah. With the singing, I mean, we're not talking about instruments, are we? We're not talking about.
No instruments. No,
we're talking about the singing is dictated by the cantillations over the letters. Is that correct?
No. It's when I say singing, I'm saying literally singing. We take the words and we sing them. Okay. Cantillations have to do with reading verses. Even the verses from the Book of Psalms, at least 3 of them are sung. There's different traditions. Everybody's place. Is this, if you walk into a synagogue and they're not singing, today it's considered to be kind of strange.
Okay.
You know, today it's become the standard that you sing these.
Right.
Then really, you know, the evening prayers, we go over the whole, you know, there's a prayer here that talks about the evening coming and the times of the world changing. And actually, it's very interesting. These are called the blessings of the Shema. And they're actually the ones in the morning and the ones in the evening are more or less the same. Just one talks about daytime, the other one talks about nighttime.
Mm-hmm.
And this actually probably dates back to an even earlier practice from the Second Temple period. That they spoke about the issue of the changing of the times.
Right.
So it might be. I don't know. I have never had the chance to sit down and look at the prayers of Qumran that might give us an idea and indication of what they did. But from what I remember, from what I've seen, there is a link there.
Are you going to sing a little bit for us?
No, I don't have a singing voice. I just did. I told you what the words say. I gave you something.
You tell everyone on the radio. Oh, yeah. So we're on the radio and you tell everybody, I don't have a singing voice, but every time we get together, you sing. I think probably every single time you and I are talking, having a conversation at some stage, you sing something. Come on, give us a little bit. Give us a line.
With a horrible cracked voice. No, I can't sing it. I had a bit of an accident last week and my having trouble with my throat.
Yeah. Oh, we'll read some lyrics for us. What is this one?
So, for example, we have in the morning, this is done every morning,
mm-hmm.
is a thing called the Baruch She'amar. It basically goes, blessed he who says in the world was. Basically, I used to say to people, he who said and there was. And my reason for saying that, but Mi She'amar V'haya Olam. So if you translate that, roughly translate, it's like he who said and there was. So we say, blessed he who said and the world came to being. Blessed he, the one who created the creator of Genesis or the... blessed he who says and does, blessed he who commands and it happens, blessed is the one who shows mercy to the earth, blessed he the one who shows mercy to creations, blessed he who pays, the word that I'm looking for is, you know, when you give someone, he who rewards a good reward to the ones who fear him,
blessed
he who lives and exists forever, blessed is he who redeems and saves, blessed is his name, and it goes on, and it's actually a blessing. Then it turns into actual blessing. It starts in Baruch Atah Adonai. It actually turns into a blessing. So blessed our Lord, King of the universe, the God, the Father, the merciful, the praise, and he was praised in the mouth of his people,
mm-hmm.
Gloryful. I'm just trying to think of the words, how to translate this, because some of them, you know, in English, there's less words for it. he who is glorified in the by the tongues of his servants, his highest ones are his servants, or the ones who follow him and his servants, and the songs of David his servant, we shall praise you, God our, basically Lord, I'm going to translate that way, Lord our God, with praises and songs, and we shall exalt and praise you, praise and glorify and mention your name. Mention your name. And we don't do that.
Isn't that interesting?
Mention your name and she'll make you a and make you a king over us, our king, our God, the only one, he who lives forever, the king. Again, he repeats in words, the glorified and the great, forever and ever, his name is great. And then he says, again, uh-huh. The king who is praised with praises. And that's basically, that's actually an opening. Again, probably you'll be able to find a better translation than what I did, but that's basically an opening used every day.
In the morning service at the synagogue, right?
Yeah, but during Shabbat, what sometimes happens, specifically Yemenites do that, a man stands up and says that with a tune. Unlike the rest of the week, he'll just read it out, and mm-hmm. Shabbat, he'll stand up and just read it out with a tune with for a everyone.
Okay.
Yeah, with a melody. Then we just have all these psalms that we go through.
So hang on. Before we go on to those, can you just read that one out for us in the Hebrew?
Okay, let's see if I can. Okay. So you don't have to hear it in Hebrew. We don't need that.
Come on, that's what they have.
It says here. I'm going to read it. So it says, "Baruch Shamar Vaya Olam Baruch Hu Baruch Oseh Bereshit Baruch Omer VeOseh Baruch Gozer VeMikayem Baruch Merachem Al Haaretz Baruch Merachem Al Habiriyot Baruch Meshalem Sachar Tov LiReav Baruch Chai LaAd UKayem LaNetzach." ברוך פודה ומציל ברוך שמו, and then he goes, ברוך אתה אדוני אלוהינו מלך העולם האל האב הרחמן המהולל בפי עמו, משובח ומפואר בלשון חסידיו ועבדיו, ובשירי דוד עבדך, נהללך אדוני אלוהינו בשבחות ובזמירות, נגדלך ונשבחך ונפארך ונזכיר שמך ונמליכך, מלכנו אלוהינו, יחיד חי העולמי, מלך משובח ומפואר עד עד שמו הגדול, ברוך אתה אדוני מלך מהולל בתשבחות, and there's slight variations. I'm reading actually from a proper Ashkenaz Sidur, actually one of the oldest Sidurim that exist from the Ashkenaz world.
Wow.
It's one version of it. It's just a beautiful prayer. It's something very nice to hear. It's short, it's simple, and it's straightforward. I think the one I love the most, one of the ones I love the most is Nishmat Kol Chai. It's basically the souls and the spirits of all living beings will praise your name, Lord our God, and the spirit of all flesh shall praise you and exalt your mentioning, basically your name, our King forever.
Mm-hmm.
From min ha'olam ve'ad ha'olam, from one end of the world to the other end of the world, most Orthodox Jews would translate it as being from this world to the next world.
Mm-hmm.
You are God, and besides you, there's no other King or Savior, Redeemer and Savior, Giver of Parnassah, what's Parnassah in English? Oh man, I'm terrible now. I can't remember words in English. Parnassah is basically all your needs, giver of all needs,
uh-huh.
The merciful all time, at all time of need and sorrow. We have no king but you, the God of the first and the last, the first generation, the last generation, the God of all beings, the master of all history, he who is praised with many praises. He who governs his world with mercy. There's two types of mercy. There's chesed and rachamim. There's two types of mercy. So he who governs his world with, I would say, kind of grace and his beings with mercy. The Lord shall not slumber or sleep.
Mm.
He who raises the sleeping, two forms of how he who raises the sleeping. So we have different, sometimes we have different variations of the same thing because it's poetic language. It goes on and on. It talks about, you know, how much we have to praise him. And, you know, the great things that he did, brought us out of Egypt, who feeds us in hunger. And when our bellies are full, he still blesses us. And if he ever leaves us, even for one moment, we'll die. And therefore, all the parts of our body have to praise you. Every being has to praise you. It goes on and on. We actually have a very nice tune for it. We're actually going to try to put a link here of a version of this song, one version, okay. There's several different ones, but okay. It goes on, and it basically the first half of the prayers in during Shabbat, and this can go on for 40 minutes, is just praising, not even requesting anything, just praising. Actually, it's what happens during Shabbat. There's no request. We never ask for anything during Shabbat. We take Shabbat to forget about our needs
mm-hmm.
and just sit there and praise God.
So can I get, let me just understand what you're saying. That particular prayer that you gave us with all of the, I mean, little bits of the Tanakh I was picking up as you were reading it, I'm thinking that reminds me of Isaiah 45 and that reminds me of Psalm such and such.
That's exactly what it's derived from. And they say that this specific one, Nishmat Kol Chai, is actually one of the older ones.
Really? Okay. Mm-hmm. Because, to refresh everyone's memory, Isaiah 45. But Israel shall be saved by the Lord with an everlasting salvation. You shall not be ashamed or disgraced forever and ever. And it goes on to say a little bit further down, there is no other God beside me, a just God and a Savior. There is none beside me. And it's just a beautiful chapter of of Isaiah, but I picked that up as you were reading. And are you saying, I mean, that is a beautiful song, but are you saying that particular prayer can go, did I hear you say it can go on for 40 minutes?
The whole thing, if it's read, for example, if you walk into a Yemenite synagogue, and I mention Yemenites a lot because they have more of the older customs, but if you walk into a Yemenite synagogue, they start chanting that from the Baruch Shemal, from the first one of the first ones we spoke about, but from the morning.
Mm-hmm.
And they start chanting that, if they do it slowly, the way they used to, it can take up to 40 minutes to finish. Because inside there's Psalms, there's the Song on the Sea. They we also say the Song on the Sea every day. As Yeshua Moshov in Israel. There's a lot of things. So during Shabbat, it can take quite a while because dozens of Psalms and extra pieces and sections which are sung in a certain way. So it takes time. So when you go into a Shabbat service, expect yourself to be there for at least 2 hours.
Right, yeah, okay.
Because you also have a Torah reading, which can take up to half an hour, 40 minutes as well.
Yes.
And if there's a bar mitzvah there, then it's going to take even longer. You know, and you have a child who half the time don't know what they're reading, but they're reading anyhow. one of the classic prayers which are said, this is something which is said every day, and unfortunately, for example, my friend Nehemiah had to say this prayer. There's actually a video he published of it. We went up a mountain and said this prayer is the Kaddish. Now, people say this is the mourner's prayer. Actually, the whole issue of the mourner's prayer was something relatively new. It was unknown up to a couple hundred years ago. It developed in Ashkenaz and then from there spread to other countries. Now, we're saying the original prayer itself, the Kaddish itself as well, was known 1,500 years ago. But turning a type of Kaddish, turning into a mourner's prayer, that was something later on invented. Actually, Professor Tashema, which is kind of a funny name, Tashema, which is an Aramaic term, which means go out and hear, or we hear. So, for example, in the Babylonian, hear. So, there's in the Babylonian Talmud, there's an interesting difference between the Babylonian Talmud and Jerusalem Talmud when it comes to this. That in the Babylonian Talmud, they say Tashema, go out and hear.
Mm-hmm.
And in the Jerusalem Talmud, they say Tahazi, go out and see. Huh. There's actually, I saw a whole discussion about that. But anyhow, Professor Tashema has an interesting, he wrote several books about Ashkenaz Jewry, and he actually points out the issue. There's one whole section he wrote about the issue of the Kaddish, and he says that really the Kaddish over the mourner's Kaddish is really something which was developed later on in Ashkenaz and became part of mainstream Judaism.
Mm.
But the Kaddish itself, really translate as a praise. It's a praise to God. So I've always liked the Kaddish. It's always a very nice thing to hear. And it really just, you know, goes maybe Gloria, Gadel, so it Gadal or it Gadel would be from the word Gadol, so big, so glorified. So may God's name be, may the Great One's name be glorified and sanctified in this world which He has created. Chirote, I can't remember what Chirote means. And He shall reign in His kingdom in your life and in the life of all of Israel.
Mm-hmm.
Very, very now and very soon. And they say Amen. And then the congregation says, "May the name of the Great One be will be blessed for now and for all eternity." And that's basically the whole idea of the Kaddish. And then each, you know, there's a basic Kaddish, and on top of that, there's a lot of little bits which are added. So that's something, you know, you hear this a lot and people take the Kaddish for granted. But if you actually sit down and think about the Kaddish and think about the words of the Kaddish, you're like, wow, these are amazing words.
So why do you think, just curiously, I mean, in the last 100 years or so, why has that particular prayer become characteristically the mourner's prayer?
Because It just became. There was a midrash about, there's a story about Rabbi Akiva. This is a midrash, this doesn't mean it really happened. There's a story about Rabbi Akiva, who's the famous Rabbi Akiva, the one who became a Torah student at the age of 40 and started learning Hebrew and learning basically the alphabet at the age of 40. So anyone out there is learning Hebrew in their 40s, you have hope.
That's me.
And he actually became one of the greatest and most influential rabbis ever to live.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the oral law really is attributed to him. He was the one who really approached the issue of oral law in Judaism, and his friend, his colleague, Rabbi Ishmael, sometimes kind of made fun of him. He was like, "What are you talking about? The verse says something completely different." And Rabbi Ishmael had a tendency sometimes to go and actually show us the simple meaning of the word.
Mm-hmm.
The issue of midrashim is very complex, but we always find one thing. We always find at least one. That decides he's going to say actually what the words say without using, you know, midrashim and ideas to try to change it.
Mm.
So every time you open up a midrash halacha, you always find midrash halacha is a midrash that deals with the practice of the law, unlike midrash agadah, which where we're going to assert ideas from, you know, stories and concepts. We're going to try to project an idea by using a verse from the Bible, but not necessarily use the meaning of the verse. Mm. The several types of midrashim we can talk about some other time.
Sure.
But make notes next time. Lesson about midrash and oral law.
I'm writing it down.
We should write these things down because we come up with ideas and we never remember them.
Yeah, I know. But he was the one, was he? Who now? What year? This is how long ago was he?
He was born at the time of the Second Temple, towards the end of the Second Temple.
Okay.
He died just during or after the Bar Kocha revolt. He was very, very old. He was a very, very old man. They say he lived to 120. He was probably very, very old. But we also know that he was also around the time of the Second Temple. So, you know, because his name pops up at one point somewhere after the Second Temple when he was already an adult. So he was obviously around. He knew, because some of the people he interacts with are people who we know lived at the time of the Second Temple. So he was probably around there. But he was a simple man. He was a shepherd. He knew nothing. And he became a student of Torah.
Mm-hmm.
And he married the daughter of one of the richest people in Israel,
mm-hmm.
called Kalba Savua, which basically is a nickname. Kalba Savua means the stomach-filled dog.
Oh, nice.
because dogs can go and eating and eating and eating and eating. I remember Nehemiah always used to point out that Georgia is such a piglet. And yes, she was always looking for food. I remember her. This is an amazing dog. She was one of the cutest dogs that I ever seen. So he basically became a student, but he became a big fanatic of this whole oral law thing, and he pushed it away. He took it to like distances, and no one even imagined they'll go there, and he did, and he pushed it all the way to where we see rabbinical Judaism today. But one of the stories about him was that he was walking around, and he used to take care of the poor. He was in charge of the money box for the poor, so he would go from city to city collecting money for the poor. So one of the stories is that he went from one city to the other, and he finds this man all covered with dirt and blackened, as if he's been working next to a fire all the time.
Mm-hmm.
And he sees this man. This man looks like as if he's dead. And he says to him, "Who are you?" And he says, "I'm a man who died about several years ago." I think he says, "I died, and I left. My wife was pregnant when I died, and she bore a son, and he was never circumcised, and therefore I'm being punished for this." Okay, so he says to him, "Okay, I will take care of it. Where did your wife live?" And everything. He goes to that town, finds the wife, finds the uncircumcised child, and circumcises him. And the whole story with him is that his punishment is also he has to go collect the firewood for his own fire, to be punished in his own fire.
How bizarre.
So that's basically kind of like a self-punishment thing. So the original story is he circumcises the child and that's it. And the man appears to him in a dream, all dressed in white with a bed of roses on his head or something, or he's on a bed of roses and he's all smiling.
He's all good.
But the nature of midrashim is they change and they get rewritten. And the story goes at one point that they say that he found the child the child was already not a baby. He was already slightly grown up. Mm-hmm. He circumcises him and then gets him to recite the Kaddish over his father, so his father, which will be exalted, removed from the depths of hell into the heavens. Uh-huh. And part of that idea has to do with the discussion about Absalom, uh-huh, where David says, Avshalom beni, beni Avshalom, Avshalom beni, beni. Yeah. My son, Avshalom. He repeats that seven times. You say, yeah, he pulled him out from the seven levels of hell into heaven. Okay, again, heaven, hell. I actually looked at the comments. Someone asked about heaven and hell. Mm-hmm. It's a very good question. It's not simple. We need to open that Pandora's box.
I'm writing that one down as well because that's a question that gets asked a lot, and so that's interesting. But what you're saying is that particular prayer is often incorporated as well in.
It's always there. It's like the Kaddish is used as if it's like a stop in the middle. It stops in the middle of something, and it breaks it up into pieces. So we have a Kaddish in between the Psalms, and then we have a Kaddish between the Psalms and the rest of the prayers.
There it is.
It's like something that comes in between, just to, you know, take a break for a moment.
It's a filler.
I don't think it's a filler, but it kind of like marks where does this start and where does this, you know, where does this end and where this starts. That's really how it's used. So Mourner's Kaddish is really recited towards the end of the prayers. But one thing that they say there is that the whole idea of saying the Kaddish is, but while you say the Kaddish, you're helping the soul of the person have a better life in heaven, or if they're in hell, to make their life a bit easier.
Right. Yeah.
But this reminds me a lot. When we talk about heaven and hell,
that's going to have to be a different thing. But I mean, it does remind me of Catholic theology and the Mass and the thing that goes on.
The origins of heaven and hell in Catholicism are the same origins of heaven and hell in Judaism.
All right, we have to have that conversation. All right, one more thing. What's another thing that's special to you about the Shabbat services? Just give us one more thing.
One more thing. So there's the thing. If you notice, one of my favorite ones are the ones that actually are praises because they're always very nice. There's actually a thing called Yigdal Elohim Hai V'Yishtabach. So it's another song, but what it does, and you actually find it in the Siddur, it actually goes over the 13 principles of belief in Judaism. Oh, here it is. And it actually says, Yigdal Elohim Chai V'Yishtabach Nimtza V'Na'et El Metziuto. So basically it talks about the may God be exalted and the whole idea of Yigdal, again, it's the word Gadol, so to be enlarged. So the idea is that his name will be enlarged, his name will be known. So Yigdal Elohim Chai V'Yishtabach, so may God rise and become more powerful. And it says Elohim Chai, so the living God, mm-hmm, and may he be praised. He always is, and there's no limit to his existence. And then it goes over the 13 principles of Judaism, and the idea is that he is one, and he has no form, and he proceeds to everything in existence, and he's the master of the world which he created, and he gives prophecy to man, and Moses is his prophet, and he gave him a Torah, and he shall not replace that Torah for eternity, that he knows all the deeds of man, he pays man based on his actions, good or evil, that he will send a Messiah, and he will raise the dead and a missing one. What's the 13th one? Oh, that there is prophecy and that Moses was his prophet. That's the idea. And then he talked about the resurrection of the dead being the 13th one. It's actually based on what Maimonides wrote. Maimonides was the one who established the 13 principles. Mm-hmm. I would say that if you ask a regular Jew what he believes the Torah is and what are the beliefs of Judaism, they won't be able to cover all of these. But the basic idea is that they turn into songs. There's actually two songs which are related to this, but Yigdal Elohim Chai is actually my favorite one. It's actually something you can sing every day. It actually appears in the Siddur as an everyday prayer, but during Shabbat, it's emphasized. So
during Shabbat, they do go over, traditionally, they do go over the 13 principles of Judaism?
Yeah, in the song, basically.
In song, okay.
Yeah, in the song. And nice. Yeah, I would say it's one of my favorites. There's, again, a lot of different tunes for it. You know, it gives you a basic idea of what it is. And now, if you open up the Talmud, it doesn't really speak about 13 principles. It mentions other things, but some of them do appear, some of them don't.
Mm-hmm.
And just before we finish, I just want to talk about another thing. There's a thing called the Halel. And the Halel basically is something which is sung. I've been asked about this from students of mine, people that send me emails about what exactly is the Halel and where is it sung. And the Halel basically is Psalms. I think, let me pull up my Bible and I'll be able to tell exactly what Psalms they are. But these are Psalms that are sung during Rosh Chodesh, New Moon, and are sung during festivals. They're not sung every day. And it depends what time, what festival it is. But in general, we're looking at Psalms 113 all the way to Psalm 118. And these were Psalms, by the way, this was sung at the temple when they brought the sacrifices, certain sacrifices, specifically the Passover sacrifice. I don't know if you spoke with Nehemiah about the Passover sacrifice mentioned in the book of Exodus, but in the Mishnah it describes how they did it. It's a bit different from what the Bible says, but they used to sing these psalms. If they had to repeat it over and over again until they were done, they would. And the Samaritans do exactly the same thing. You're singing songs of praise to God while you're doing the Passover sacrifice. Right. So again, these are sung during Rosh Chodesh, during Passover, during Pesach, during Sukkot, on Chag Shavuot, on the festival weeks. We also sing it during Chanukah. It's also read out during Chanukah. It's not read out during Rosh Hashanah, during Yom Teruah. It's not sung out during Yom Kippur, and it's not sung out during Purim.
Well, there we go.
That's a bit of insight. Yeah, a bit of insight about the Siddur, a bit of insight of how it's done. Again, I'm very pro personal prayers. You know, I'm one of the types of guys that actually rather, you know, I go to synagogue and I love reading out the Psalms. When we reach the ones that which are dictated to us, I kind of go, but I do say them eventually. But the ones I love doing is always the Psalms, because the language is different and it feels a bit different. But again, you know, you don't have to do what the Siddur says. That's part of the issue. I don't see a need to have a specific Siddur. I just, you know, the structure itself helps a lot of people. I have friends that tell me, you know, I have trouble expressing myself. I'd rather have a Siddur. It makes my life a bit easier.
Sure. Yeah.
So even the Karaites developed their own Siddurim. That was part of it. Their Siddurim are really built mostly from verses, and the prayers are very, very different. Actually, if you go to the Karaite corner, Nehemiah Gordon's website, I think it's still there. You can actually download a Karaite Siddur and also look over that. There's actually an English translation of it. No, actually, there's a Siddur for weekdays and Shabbat.
Truly. Oh, well, there you go. We'll have to have a look at that. So that's just for everybody. That's Karaite Corner, corner with a K. It's karaite-corner.org. That you should be able to find those there.
And it still should be there.
But there are some of the things that are of particular interest to you that you find special, some of the prayers that you particularly like that we were able to focus in on that are mostly for the most part of the traditional services in synagogues for Shabbat.
Yeah, that's part of it. It's a very, very small part of what exists.
Yeah.
If it's a special Shabbat, there's a whole bunch of other things. But I think the main issue when you go to pray is do it from your heart and do it as long as you can. You don't. If a prayer lasts 2 minutes but it's internal, it's better off than a prayer that takes an hour when it's completely external. It's completely just from your lips and outwards.
Yes.
That was one of the discussions, you know, one of the things that we have to deal with all the time as Jews, because our religion today evolves a lot around the issue of prayer, but it's mandatory prayer. It's no longer prayer where, you know, you express yourself. It's more like, I was told to say X, Y, Z. So it's very, very different. A lot of us actually struggle with this. I mean, I've had conversations with people where they say, I just can't do this everyday prayer. It just doesn't work for me.
Yeah. So a prayer from the heart is so much more valuable than a mechanical, obligated prayer, obviously. But that still, you know, doesn't negate some of the beautiful, beautiful prayers that you find in the Siddur.
Yeah, it doesn't. Yeah, exactly.
Beautiful.
But you have to have the mood for it. This is why I don't think the Tanakh ever thought, you know, that you ever gave us a commandment to pray, because it's an internal thing. It's inside of you. It's no longer. It's not an action. One of the interesting things about Hebrew is a verbal language, so actions is what counts, and prayer is less of action, more of speech.
Mm-hmm.
So it's a bit different. So I don't think there's a commandment in the Torah to pray. I just think it's just something, all religions have the concept of prayer.
Mm.
So Torah never commanded that. The Torah took specifications and said, this is what I'm commanding you as a Torah. But obviously, if a person just practices and never prays, so your interaction with God is still very mechanical as well.
Mm. And I suppose it can be likened to a conversation with just your fellow man. You're not going to get together with your friend and get out a book and start going through mechanical conversation as if it's scripts from a play that you can read back and forth with each other. It's interactive and it's heartfelt and it's mm-hmm. Relevant to what's going on in your life and it's relational. And I think that's so much of what prayer should be, a discussion between man and his creator.
Exactly.
Yeah.
So with these words, I think that we just have to take it from our hearts.
Mm.
And even if we decide to use a siddur, which I 90% of the time do, but if we decide to use a siddur, let's try to focus when we do it.
Yeah.
Let's try to let the words have meaning instead of just reciting words.
Yes.
Let's allow God to be a real part of our life and not just a mechanical thing when we go in and we swipe a card and that's it.
Brilliant. Okay, I totally agree and I think that's excellent advice and we should leave it there. Yoel Ben Shlomo and, of course, my Hebrew teacher, I should let everybody know, hebrewinisrael@gmail.com is the email address if you would like Hebrew lessons from this very knowledgeable man, hebrewinisrael@gmail.com. And also, can I tell everyone that you now have a Facebook page where people can go?
I opened up a Facebook page and I want to say something very, very simple. And I want you to leave this on the recording, Jono.
Mm-hmm.
I post sometimes things that some of you might not like, but I have one request and something specific happened last week and we are going to talk about this eventually.
Mm.
But I would post things and please do not take it in an offensive way. Okay, I post something. The purpose of this Facebook page is to allow more information to leak out that we don't talk about when we do the conversation. Specifically, I picked up the issue of the 10 tribes. I posted something. Don't take it offensive. It's just another piece of information. It's another possible discussion.
Yeah.
I tackled something by a person called Yair Davidi. I read his website. I went through things. I posted something. Don't take it personally. It's just there. I'm taking time to write things on this on this Facebook page just to have more information out there.
Open up the discussion.
Also means you can directly communicate with me. You can send messages. You can post something and directly communicate with me.
And it is, of course,
that's the purpose.
Hebrew in Israel, of course, is the title of that. And you can find it on Facebook, this very controversial man, Yoel Ben Shlomo.
Controversial. Thank you.
My friend, thank you for coming back on The Truth to You and giving us just a little bit of focus and some of the things that are special to you in some of these prayers. Thank you, my friend. In the meantime, listeners, be blessed, be set apart by the truth of our Father's word. Shalom.